Colonial dispossession and its contestation is heard in language and in the sounds we often don't attend to. In Nauru, the sounds of mining and land being cleared, the sounds of detention, the sounds of self-determination. They are also heard in quiet, the intermittent cries of the reed warbler, the surgeon fish who did not sing, in the gaps in stories that are filled with eyes pulled into the distance, a word cut off before the final syllable is said, sentences broken apart and truths indicated with euphemisms or questions with no answer. Listening has taught me that to speak of ecocide means to build relations from and with places like Nauru in ways that disallow abstraction, that anchor your body to the ground, to the air, and to the sea. To understand ecocide as something that is of the world that I am of as well is crucial to moving away from the one-dimensional stories of collapse, of the end times, or of white saviors and technocratic solutions. It has become open to incommensurability. Because to approach ecocide from attunement is to see that even the starkest silence speaks of life, even if we can't hear it.
Different ideas of social and political life entail different technologies for their realization. One can create systems of production, energy, transportation, information handling, and so forth that are compatible with the growth of autonomous, self-determining individuals in a democratic polity. Or one can build, perhaps unwittingly, technical forms that are incompatible with this end, and then wonder how things went strangely wrong. The possibilities for matching political ideas with technological configurations appropriate to them are, it will seem, almost endless. If, for example, some perverse spirit set out to deliberately design a collection of systems to increase the general feeling of powerlessness, enhance the prospects for the dominance of technical elites, create the belief that politics is nothing more than a remote spectacle to be experienced vicariously, and thereby diminish the chance that anyone would take democratic citizenship seriously, what better plan to suggest than that we simply keep the systems we already have?
Forever.
D-Day today is setting orange, the 72nd day of Discord in the YOLD 3186.
First I must sprinkle you with fairy dust. Suddenly the place became devoid of light. Then an utter silence enveloped them, and a great stillness was felt. Then came a blinding flash of intense light, as though their very psyches had gone nova. Then vision returned. There is no goddess but goddess, and she is your goddess. There is no Erisian movement but the Erisian movement, and it is the Erisian movement. And every golden apple core is the beloved home of a golden worm.
Playboy Advisor, Playboy, April, 1969, pages 62 to 64.
After an hour or so of
Fermi has been my friend since childhood. Now that we have both reached maturity, I see our relationship in a new light.
I recently heard an old man of right-wing views, a friend of my grandparents, assert that the current wave of assassinations in America is the work of a secret society called the Illuminati. He said that the Illuminati have existed throughout history, when the international banking cartels have all been 32nd degree Masons and were known to be Ian Fleming, who portrayed them as Spectre in his James Bond books, for which the Illuminati did away with Mr. Fleming. At first, all this seemed like a paranoid delusion to me. Then I read in the New Yorker that Alan Chapman, one of Jim Garrison's investigators in the New Orleans probe of the John Kennedy assassination, believes that the Illuminati really exist.
There is no goddess but goddess, and she is your goddess. There is no Eresian.
There is no goddess but goddess, and she is your goddess. There is no Eresian movement, but the Eresian movement, and it is the Eresian movement. And every golden apple core is the beloved home of a golden worm.
This traditionally unlucky sign was cast by Atlantean scientist priests shortly before the destruction of their continent and is generally connected with death by water. Other vibrations link it to earthquakes, tornadoes and similar disasters, and to sickness, decay, and morbidity as well. The first correlation is with the unbalance between technological acceleration and political retrogression, which has preceded Earth-wide at ever-widening danger levels since 1914 and especially since 1964. The breaking apart is fundamentally the schizoid and schismatic mental fugue of lawyer politicians attempting to administrate a worldwide technology whose mechanisms they lack the education to comprehend and whose gestalt trend they frustrate by breaking apart into obsolete renaissance nation-states. General prognosis, many mega-deaths. There is some hope for avoidance of the emerging pattern with prompt action of correct nature. Probability of such avoidance is 0.17 plus or minus 0.05. No blame.
Males as a group have and do benefit the most from patriarchy, from the assumption that they're superior to females and should rule over us. But those benefits have come with a price. In return for all the goodies men receive from patriarchy, they are required to dominate women, to exploit and oppress us, using violence if they must to keep patriarchy intact. Most men find it difficult to be patriarchs. Most men are disturbed by hatred and fear of women, by male violence against women, even the men who perpetrate this violence. But they fear of letting go of the benefits. They are not certain what will happen to the world they know most intimately if patriarchy changes. So, they find it easier to passively support male domination, even when they know in their minds and their hearts that it is wrong. Bell Hooks, feminism is for everybody. Passionate politics.
I just got out of school. I got into this like nice little studio and I was working on this data system design, and I was talking to the client, and who was a man. And while we were talking, I kind of like realized he made a mistake with something in the system. And when I pointed out to him, he just like snapped at me and got super upset with me and said like, I don't know my shit. I'm working on this system for so long. How can it be that I don't know this? Blah, 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 blah. And then we hung up and I talked to my boss, who was a man, and explained to him what happened. And we realized that I was right, actually, that with the mistake I made, mistake he made. And
you go that way.
Yeah. Or there's a road. We're gonna walk safely across. So yeah. And then my boss, who was a man, went to the client and told him, explained to him again the mistake he made. And then the client was like, "Oh yeah, that is a mistake." But of course, when my boss told him that, it was fine. And when I told him that, he didn't listen to me. And I was super upset because at first I got yelled at. Then my boss like kind of told me to let it go and don't like make a big deal out of it. And the guy was not called for and I needed to continue to work with him. Yeah. So yeah,
it's a weird because like I mean, people like men don't really think that they're sexist or they do like some things that are like misogynistic just because they don't like yell at women in the street from their cars, and that's why they feel like they shouldn't be criticized ever, or they shouldn't be accused, like, quote unquote, accused of being misogynistic. I mean, I had a lot of experiences with, especially not being taken seriously during my study. And I had one particular teacher who was known for, and who was actually not only known for, but, like, we can see that he was pursuing his female students and he was trying to get, like, dates by, like telling the students that they're going to fail and that they can that he can help them, and trying to get them to like have a date. Actually, one of his girlfriends while I was studying was a first year student who was like 20 years younger than him, and it was really hard because on one hand like you can see that like there's a student who's being like, there's a young woman who's being preyed upon by a much older man, and then there's also a student who is, by the virtue of dating the teacher, getting better grades. And actually, like in the school, it's not allowed to be dating your student, obviously. And if you have any sort of like special relationship with your students, like you can't grade them. So we tried to make noise about this. There's a group of female students. Maybe we can just turn around and
yeah,
because it's going to be allowed.
Yeah.
For a while.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, we wanted to make some noise about this, but a lot of the time the response we got was that like we should mind our own business and that it's their life. But it was it was their life, but also there was this their lives don't exist in a vacuum. Like one of these people is 19 years old. We realized that like for this to be dealt with, we had to bring this to the spotlight. And and then what happened was like his door was vandalized by someone, and that sort of made a lot of noise. And then he thought I did it, and then he came and threatened me with like reporting me to the police for harassment.
Why did he think you did it? Because you were like kind of the leader of the fight or something?
It's not that I was the leader, but he had a lot of problems with me in the previous years too. This happened while I was in my final year. I was the most vocal in that group. He thought like, he came to me and he said like, "I know you have a problem with me, and my door was vandalized, and you're the only one, you're the one of the only students who are at school right now, because it was early in the morning. And so I'm going to, so I know what, I know that you did it, and I'm going to prove it, and I'm going to sell you to the police. And that was actually a very stupid thing to do on his part, because I went to the dean and I complained about what he said, and I complained that I, like, he threatened me without any sort of proof. And that kind of actually did it. He got disciplinary action against him, and then the next year he had to leave the school, but all the time he was there, he was like preying on female students. Like, that was like, you know,
yeah,
5 or 6 years while he was working there.
Good girl, 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 good girl. Good girl.
Don't kiss me, don't let me go, I need it to flex. She forgot to miss you, burn with a purpose. My mom is dead, like ashes on water. Sometime I don't need it to just fall into you.
The ear hears, the brain listens, the body senses vibrations.
It is a constantly revolving, involuting experience.
I'm just not enough of a nerd.
The information would still be clear. Anonymous because of the numbers of individuals involved. We know that such a limitation is not at all restricting if enough decisions are made.
Those are so-called Arduino boards, which are basically development boards built around a microcontroller.
And the other option there, if it doesn't do that, is sometimes it blows the whole can off.
and it just makes a mess. It gives out a vapor of the electrolyte, which is slightly caustic. It can unravel the foil across the room. It can go off with enough force to actually cause injury if it hits you. So you have to be kind of careful with electrolytic capacitors.
Since they're changing tape, I think it's starting to work again.
Listening is a lifetime practice that depends on accumulated experiences with sound.
But all this action goes on in the dark, hidden underground. It's called stealing or piracy, as if sharing a wealth of knowledge were the moral equivalent of plundering a ship and murdering its crew.
My mind is stimulated in a new direction by the first half of the word.
I am not a nerd.
Maybe we ought to ask some nerds what this thing really does. Let's have a hearing. Bring in the nerds.
You can tell that I am not warmed up yet. I hope you can tell. Right. All right. So I can get it leaned up, lined up, and I can say, for instance, other entities like an invisible string. I don't know whether that's tabs or characters in there, but I can say if I want to replace that invisible string with just one character.
I'm looking for somebody to come before this body and testify in a hearing and say this is why they're wrong.
You can tell that I am not warmed up yet. I hope you can tell. Right. All right. So I can get it leaned up, lined up. And I can say, for instance, other entities like an invisible string. I don't know whether that's tabs or characters in there, but I can say if I want to replace that invisible string with just one character.
We chose Deep Listening as a title for the CD and band. We were all incurable punsters, and we created the music so deep underground.
Really?
If she brushes against any object in her path, contacts are operated that turn the steering away. And so, automatically, she takes avoiding action.
Communication at once anonymous and personal.
In a simple villa on the outskirts of Bristol lives Dr. Gray Walter, a neurologist, who makes robots as a hobby.
That was another boo-boo I made. I left several statements frozen. This statement I've asked to be frozen. That was the setup operation. It's just going to stay there above that dotted line as the viewing part of my screen from there down jumps around on the links I have set up.
There was just something about watching those clueless members of Congress debate the bill, watching them insist they could regulate the internet and a bunch of nerds couldn't possibly stop them.
The abstracting of an idea. There is sufficient redundancy in the spelling of the words.
The practice of deep listening, as it has developed, explores the difference between hearing and listening.
But sharing isn't immoral. It's a moral imperative.
A hidden link will take me to the next one.
But as there are only two possible messages, buy and sell, in this case, 500,000 decided points give fair rendition. 1,000,000 would be better.
On the right side, we have the digital pins 0 to 14, and on the left side, the analog pins, as well as some power pins.
Personal, because of the countless individuals that created its form. Each one who in his turn added something good, or who took something bad away.
Okay, then. So I will connect my Arduino to the laptop and upload the code. Upload the check. Somewhere.
And when that happens, the top will either sort of, if you looked at the from the side, bulge up. But if it goes too far, that X that's etched onto the top will split open and it will vent out the top.
Welcome to the Insecurity Hotline. The hotline where we turn insecurities into securities. You can call us all day, any day, and together we'll reshape the collectivity for you to fit in.
Incoming call number 1.
Hello.
I'm not sure who I am. I don't know. I can't remember anything that happened to me. I don't know. I have no idea what where I am and what I'm doing here. I didn't know that I don't know until I realized that I don't, and now I don't know what to do. What is me now? Could you maybe do something about it? I don't know what I is. Please.
First of all, let me tell you one thing. There is nothing new except for what has been forgotten. A famous philosopher once said, "The advantage of bad memory is that one enjoys several times the same good thing for the first time." Anyway, this is the reason why your case was of interest to us. People always talk about how hard it can be to remember things, but no one ever talks about how much effort we put into forgetting. That's a quote. We have to carry everything with us, and it can be exhausting sometimes. We forget things we try to remember. We remember things we'd rather forget. The most frightening thing about memory is that it leaves no choice. Do not dwell in the past. Concentrate the mind on the present moment. Most wise men who've had the privilege of a documented life will tell you this. Forgetting is absolutely necessary for sanity. Consider yourself one of the lucky ones. Most of us wish we could forget, but we can't afford to.
It's okay if you don't know who you are, whether it's a short episode of amnesia, or perhaps you haven't known your whole life. Because from up here, you're not even visible. I think I can see something, but it just looks like a speck of dust. It's more a part of a big amorphous blob that moves somehow in unison. And individual identity almost becomes insignificant when you're seeing things from up here.
Incoming call number 2.
I'm mostly insecure about my technical and strategic brain for multiple reasons, but it's especially in regards to finding my way, driving safely, doing anything technical. I'm even very bad at gaming and other logical things that require you to have this certain, I don't know, skills where your brain connects to your hands and arms doing stuff that is nice and functional. And I'm insecure about it because it seems very silly in everyday life that I can't do the most basic of tasks like crossing the road and figuring out the rules. That is my main insecurity.
It's okay, we can find a use for you. Not everybody has to operate on strict forms of logic. Here you can be part of the mesh, where everybody's existence is complementary and part of a bigger whole.
The world is truly a chaotic place, and logical skills are necessary for us to be able to interpret it and to orient inside of it. We pose all of these structures and systems very strategically to make ourselves a functional part of it. It is difficult. I admire that you can say it out loud just like that. But how do we respond to this systematization in little daily tasks? Instead of chaotically rambling around, maybe focusing on your breath and feeling the gravity that flows through your head and the spine into the ground towards the center of the earth. Maybe that could help.
Incoming call number 3.
So I've been living with imposter syndrome for about 6 or 7 years now. And for me, that means a fear of not being perceived as genuine despite all my efforts. And that fear translates into my personality or the way that I form relationships with other people, or even my personal kind of interests. It's terrifying to feel like whatever you do or say is insufficient or is misinterpreted as not coming from an honest place.
I'm sure everybody told you this already. What matters is the perception that you have on yourself, the relation that you have with yourself. Nobody else will ever truly understand you. Nobody else will ever know how it's like to be in your skin and to walk in your shoes. To be perceived genuine first comes from a position of perceiving yourself as genuine and searching for this little part in you that is always there, a part that gives you self-trust, that gives you your uniqueness. You know, you are completely different than any other person in this earth, and that is beautiful. And you can accept that and work with this difference and relate with this difference to other people, to their differences.
The fraud police are this imaginary, terrifying force of experts and real grown-ups who don't exist and who come knocking on your door at 3 a.m. when you least expect it, saying, "Fraud police, we've been watching you and we have evidence that you have no idea what you are doing." And you stand accused of the crime of completely making shit up as you go along. You do not actually deserve your job, and we're taking everything away, and we're telling everybody. And people working in the arts especially have to combat the inner fraud police on a daily basis. And even if you are a very happy, healthy, confident person, the fear of the fraud police is ever lurking. And it really doesn't matter who you are. And eventually, I promise you, you will get to a point where the fraud police will come knocking. And you will open the door. And when they accuse you of being a fraud, you will honestly be able to say, "You're right. I still have no idea what I'm actually doing. I am making this shit up as I go along, but it is working out just fine." And also herein behind me is an incredible party with awesome people, a bumping sound system that we built ourselves out of salvaged parts, with a giant electronic glass bubble bath installation filled with escaped pandas and dancing girls that we found on Craigslist, and you are not invited. Congratulations, you guys.
That is wrestling. How about you? So I'm asking about that. It was Franzius.
This week in Bird Report.
Welcome to Expert Village. My name is Wayne Peterson, and I direct the Massachusetts Audubon Society's Important Bird Areas Program for Massachusetts. Today, we're here at the Daniel Webster Wildlife Sanctuary in Marshfield, Massachusetts, and we're going to be talking about the equipment needed to get one started in birding. Now, one of the things that's really important as a starting birder, and also increasingly as your birding career progresses, is to keep track of what you see, to keep records, to keep good notes. And there's various ways to do that, and there are various systems that different birders use, but sort of fundamental to the process is a small notebook, a field notebook, something that you can carry into the field, preferably pocket size, that will allow you to make your notes while you're on the spot. Make sure that you use a pen that is waterproof so that if your notes get wet. And finally, I would add that in place of hard copy notes, many people increasingly are using the computer, and there are various software packages that allow you to maintain your bird notes, your bird list, your bird records. Many of these things are databases that can be interactive and you can move information around. But certainly keeping track of what you see is very important, and where you go and how many individuals of each species. These are things that are very critical to a birding career.
This week in Bird Report.
You saying tickle, tickle? Hmm?
Tickle, tickle.
That's right.
Tickle, tickle.
Anything else?
Tickle, tickle. Tickle, tickle.
No, don't bite on my computer.
Be quiet.
No, don't tell me to be quiet. You're supposed to say I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Oh, good boy. Hmm? Good boy.
Good boy.
Yeah, you're so good today. That's why I let you on my computer.
Ouch.
Ouch.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
This week in Bird Report.
All right, maybe you've seen the billboard near the Highland Strip or heard the story on Wednesdays Live at 9. A campaign called Birds Are Not Real brings its efforts to the Mid-South.
And this morning we are joined by one of the messengers of the movement. Peter McIndoe is here to tell us how this all came about. We want to emphasize you were not the founder.
No, ma'am.
So how did you become aware of it? What is the message of the movement?
The message of the movement is essentially to spread awareness that from 1959 through 2001, the government mercilessly genocided over 12 billion birds and simultaneously replaced them with surveillance drones in disguise that film us every day as equally as these cameras are filming us right now.
So what do you have to back that up?
To back that up, I have as much evidence as the birds have provided. There's so much. So really before the internet age, before the internet era, it was very easy to censor ideas and opinions that aren't popular and that people don't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we have the internet, there are no more book burnings, there are no more censored television ads.
Well, there are attempts to do all of that, but you're right. It's like Arab Spring. It's very grassroots, ground
up. So where does this movement go from here?
From here, we're looking to see change in legislation. We're looking to see a mass spread awareness.
Are lawmakers, though, really taking this seriously? Because a lot of people will have their doubts or have their questions about whether or not the movement is really serious or not.
Yeah, that's been a really hard part of this, honestly. Since the billboard's gone up, there's been a reaction of supporters and loyal bird truthers coming out, saluting, bowing. It's almost become almost like a sacred pilgrimage to see it. Others, though, seem to have some kind of laugh response, and it really pains me.
All right, Peter, we appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Birdsaren'treal.com.
This week in Bird Report.
Did you just see that bird? I think it was this blue bird. I mean, it could also be yellow, or it was like a color I've never seen before. And then I looked beyond the bird and saw this gigantic sky, and then the cosmos and beyond. I think I just looked beyond my imagination, and then I wondered, what kind of other birds will be out there?